This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Choose from over 85,000 titles and get a free audiobook download at audibletrial.com/Bobby Blackwolf. More information after the midpoint break. They found E.T. One cartridge. That's great, but I have the real urban legend they should be searching for. Plus, why would Nintendo stop their own employees from speaking to developers? Tonight is April 27th, 2014, and the Bobby Blackwolf Show featuring your calls and chat comments is up next. So you would say even if... Okay, I'll let you go. You talk. Wow, what happened to your voice? Thank you, Skype. So video games, that's what the show is about.
This is that one Akia Ripper from Sweden.
And what's with all the Halo hate, Bob? You've been hating on Halo a lot lately.
I just don't like shooters. I'm not saying it's a bad game, I just don't like it. Billy O.K. says he can't be seen in public playing games that aren't hardcore. What would people say? And what up, G and Chad is once again talking about wrestling. That's why it's not because they hate the fans, it's more because they have to start from scratch.
Hogwash later.
From a little room in Atlanta, Georgia, Bobby Blackwolf.
Look at that deft in there trying to rile me up. Yeah, trying to rile me up right before the show. Hello, everybody, and welcome to a not-riled-up edition, hopefully, of the Bobby Blackwolf Show, where we discuss the current news affecting the video game industry, as well as sometimes, like tonight, reminiscing about gaming's history. My name is Bobby Blackwolf. You're joining us live here on the Voice of Geeks Network at VogNetwork.com. Welcome. Head on over to our chat room, live.VogNetwork.com, where I'll be trying to read intelligent comments from chat and not trying to read the ragey comments in chat throughout the night. And you can check in. If you are logged into the site, check in live for the last time for the month of April. Just like, three people tonight, Mako and Fifth Dream tied for first. They checked in 4 seconds after the show went live, and then Raginator checked in 5 seconds after them. You can check in, get points and stuff, which won't go towards the raffle this week, this month, because there is no raffle this month. We pushed it to May because it's already the 27th. Or you can listen for a pass race somewhere in the episode, and depending on which month you put it in, you could get 5 points toward that monthly leaderboard. Next month, we are going to be giving away what we had teased last week, Season 1 Blu-ray of Arrow, U.S. residents only, because we actually are going to mail it to you guys, and we'll talk a little bit later on in the show about how you can even get more points by participating with our new TV section of TV reviews. So, you can listen for that passphrase and put it in on the site at any time, whenever you hear it. A little bit later on, I'm going to be opening up our Skype line and our toll-free number for you to call in. Our Skype line is Bobby Blackwolf Show, that is all one word, or toll-free in North America, 1-888-36-GAME-1, or you can contact me on my website, bobbyblackwolf.com. First off, if you are here, if you are one of like the two people that listen to this show that's in the Atlanta area, speaking of old stuff and old games and old computers and things like that, the Southeastern, like the Vintage Computer Festival, Southeast. I went to this last year, and it's in Roswell, which is a suburb of Georgia. Speaking of New Mexico, apparently, but it's in Roswell, Georgia, and it's in an old CompUSA building. It's actually next weekend, and I'll be there. I think it's like $10 to get in. And it's not only the Vintage Computer Festival, but it's also the Apple Pop-Up Museum, which was also there last year, which has like the very first Apple motherboard a version of the very first Apple motherboard that came out and stuff. And it was really interesting, a lot of fun to hang out with. They're actually in a bigger space this year, so there's going to be more vintage computer, vintage gaming. They've brought the soldering area where they give kids really hot tools to make things meld together. It's supervised, but it's always fun to give kids things that are really, really hot and melts things. So there's a soldering area and all that stuff. And there's even there's also a swap area this time around. So if you're into seeing vintage computers, they are going to have a vintage gaming area as well, where they also have, 8-bit, and it's not just really old stuff, but I think it's like they'll have 8-bit and 16-bit. I think they stop at the CD era. But that's the Vintage Computer Festival, Southeast. You can check that out if you're in the area. And that's next weekend. And another thing I do want to talk about, because I backed this, and people have asked me that they're in the VR community. So finally, you can drink again, even though I haven't talked about it or actually done anything regarding the Oculus Rift in a couple weeks after my monologue a couple weeks ago that nobody cared about, apparently. I backed a Kickstarter this week, and I think it is only for the Oculus Rift. So this is not something that's going to benefit people like other games I've talked about have had a monitor mode, so you could still enjoy it. But this one, it's an Oculus Rift only game, as far as I can tell, called Technolust. And this is actually, I have backed this for this is the largest backing I've ever done on Kickstarter, and it was just funded. But it's basically, it is a first-person role-playing game in the style, but it's like Blade Runner. It's a little bit of Blade Runner, a little bit of Tron, thrown in, and there's a demo out of it, and it was fantastic. And it plays like an adventure game. It's not really at least the demo doesn't play like an action game, but it's more like an adventure game, and it's made specifically for the Rift, and it works really well. It's probably one of the most polished VR adventure games I've played. And I've played a couple of them, and there are a couple polished ones out there, like Asunder Earthbound and things like that. But this one I'm really excited about. And so if you are even interested and may get a consumer version of the Rift when it comes out, or probably any VR headset, depending on, if you really don't want to support the Rift anymore, go check it out. It's already funded, but they're trying to get some stretch goals in there. So check out Technolust. It is safe for work, even though, you'd think with the name it's not. But it's a cyberpunk adventure game, and it's really well done, and I'm really excited about it. And SSJ100 Matt just linked it in the chat. I will have the link also in the show notes. For it. I think there's like 14 days left or something like that. So even if you're listening on the podcast, even since these come late, you can go in there and back it. And hey, it's Canadian dollars, so it's less money if you're in the U.S. than it looks. The news that everybody's talking about is that they finally found the cartridge. They found a cartridge. The cartridge was E.T. And this is the cartridge that many claim was the reason the video game industry crashed back in 1983. It was only a small part of it. There was Pac-Man as well, the port of Pac-Man, which was a very big technological achievement if you actually like look at how they made the Pac-Man game. But the game sucked. Didn't matter how awesome it was under the hood. But there was also a combination of factors. Too many other companies were getting into the game, releasing subpar things, and oversaturation of product, kind of like the app stores of today. And there was a lot of crap out there, and that's why the market crashed. E.T. didn't help. But there was an urban legend that they made more. What was insane is that they made more E.T. cartridges than there actually were Atari 2600s out there. Like they had more cartridges than actual consoles. I don't know why. It was because you didn't need to buy two versions. You didn't. I don't know. I guess that was kind of their thinking was that this would sell. We'll make more consoles and we need E.T. I don't know. But it turned out that E.T. sucked because poor Howard Scott Warshaw, who also made the best game for the Atari 2600, he made Yar's Revenge. So he's a very talented coder. He only had 6 weeks to make the game. Because of licensing fees, it took so long to license the game, and they needed to have it timed with the movie, and so they couldn't spend too long on it. So he literally had 6 weeks to make the entire game, and that's design, develop, debug, all that stuff. If it had a couple more months, it would have been so much better. And somebody actually made a ROM hack of it where they actually spent a couple more months debugging it and actually made it a playable game. And it was kind of playable if you read the manual. The trick is, play on game 3. Don't play on game 1. Everybody goes in and plays on game 1, and then they're like, oh my god, I got taken away by the CIA agent or whoever that was. If you go to game 3, that's actually the starter level instead of game 1. That makes it so, the agent's not always coming after you and stuff like that. So you can actually get a handle on how to actually get out of the pits, which is kind of tricky. But I can actually beat E.T. With on game 3, which basically is it's a never-ending, you know, it's kind of sad because at the end of E.T., you know, you go home, you know, you get to the aliens and they take you home and then they drop you right back at Elliot's house. It's kind of sad. But they dropped these cartridges, according to urban legend. All the cartridges they didn't sell got dumped in a New Mexico landfill. And this was a urban legend for many, many years. They finally, there was a production company that wanted to excavate them and actually do a documentary about it. And there's actually a fictional movie, The Angry Video Game Nerd. He's making a movie, and it's all about this urban legend. And they had a little bit of a setback because they needed to get more permits from like environmental divisions of the New Mexico government and stuff. But they finally got all that stuff. And yesterday was the day they were going to actually look in this landfill. Now, this is not like a like it's not where your trash would go. So because a lot of people were thinking, oh, well, you know, of course you're going to find that type of stuff in there. This was actually like an actual landfill that corporations use to dump product and things like that. But Polygon reports that excavators did, in fact, find copies of the Atari 2600 cartridge E.T. In a dig in Alamogordo. I never even tried to pronounce it before reading that. Alamogordo, New Mexico landfill on Saturday. So it's going to be the subject of an upcoming documentary. Appears to confirm the story that Atari dumped thousands of unsold E.T. cartridges at the site more than 30 years ago. So Zach Penn, who is the director of the forthcoming documentary, told Polygon, quote, "I'm really psyched for the people who are here. All these people who showed up to see something, and obviously they're seeing something. If we had found absolutely nothing, that would have been the point of the documentary. What would have sucked is if we had dug up some stuff and there's no E.T. games. I'm glad that didn't happen," unquote. You know, because I actually remember when I was a kid, I did watch the Geraldo live of the Al Capone vault and stuff. So I get, that's why they didn't do it live. But they did invite there was a crowd at the scene by the promotion, and also on Xbox Live, Major Nelson was there, which basically what this means is that now, you know, if they found more than one cartridge, they only showed one cartridge, but if they found more than one, we now know what next month's Games for Gold promotion is going to be. It's going to be E.T. So it's funny that Microsoft was a part of this. I mean, there's pictures. Major Nelson was there. He was a part of some of the stuff. He helped, he held up the cartridge as well with Zach. And, you know, Rob actually made this point. Rob from OLR, he made this point. And, you know, they care so much about this and you know, the old history. And Xbox Live is spending all this money to promote. And I guess they're helping fund this documentary. You know, all about this old stuff, yet they couldn't keep Game Room running. SJ Winner Matt says, "What bothers me is that some people feel that this is the gaming version of finding the Titanic. So silly." Fifth Dream says, "I feel like they're," and I guess he's talking about Microsoft, "they're dicks for digging that up." Yes, you can say that. "It wasn't theirs to do. It wasn't their legend to confirm. It was gamers, and they suck for messing with my childhood memories." And he continues, "And they were just attention-grabbing by slapping their corporate names on with this legend, and now forever they will be associated with it." So Fifth Dream's not happy about that. But here's the thing. That's not the urban legend I wanted them to go after. There's an actual urban legend that I really think that people should go after and try to figure out. We all believe it's a hoax, but, you know, why not make a documentary about this legend? This is actually my favorite gaming urban legend. And actually, when I was doing, when I did one time, I was doing a Jeopardy-style game show at a convention. It was based on what another podcast, Chatterbox Video Game Radio, they would do this at PAX. He allowed me to use his same template, and I made one for another convention. And I actually included this question about this game as the $500 potpourri question in our Jeopardy game. And nobody there knew what it was. Nobody on the panel, nobody in the audience, or anything like this. So this is actually like my favorite gaming trivia about this urban legend right here. And it's about an arcade game that may or may not have existed called Polybius. And according to the story, so this was an unheard of new arcade game. It appeared in several suburbs of Portland, Oregon in 1981. The game proved to be incredibly popular to the point of addiction. and lines formed around the machines, often resulting in fighting over who played next. This was followed by clusters of visits from men in black. Instead of the usual marketing data collected by company visitors to arcade machines, they collected some unknown data, allegedly testing responses to the psychoactive machines. In some versions of the story, the players suffered from a series of unpleasant side effects, including amnesia, insomnia, nightmares, and night terrors. Some players stopped playing video games, while reportedly one became an anti-gaming activist, according to Urban Legend. So the company that made it, and all that's ever been seen of this, is there was apparently somebody did find a ROM of it, but it only got to the title screen of this game. Nothing more about the game could have been found. And the company that's on that title screen that has the copyright holder is called Sinnerschlossen, which I probably butchered because I don't natively speak German, but it is German for sense delete, S-E-N-S-E delete, or deletion erasure of senses. So a lot of people are, you know, speculating that this was, you know, some government mind control device. And it's a really interesting story that has had, you know, a couple of people try to claim that they worked on it. In 2006, somebody came out and said, yeah, I worked on the game and stuff. People have tried to recreate it. A lot of people have described it as it's kind of an action puzzler, and it looks mostly like Tempest. So it probably, you know, and it's described as having a lot of, like, you know, let's say Jeff Minter style stuff with the psychedelics and stuff. And this is the urban legend I want people to look into. They say that, you know, this was the government was testing mind control with this, and that's why there were men in black and stuff. Obviously, nothing concrete has ever been found. Other attempts by people who don't have Xbox Live money to look into it found the results inconclusive. They could not confirm or deny that this ever existed. This is the best urban. This would be the Titanic, is finding Polybius or finding something about Polybius, if it even existed, or even where the legend started on Usenet, Usenet news group back in the 90s. So, I mean, you got to kind of take it with a grain of salt. And Snopes actually, if you look up the Snopes entry for this, they actually say it's a hoax. So, you know, take that for what you will. But this is what we should be doing movies and documentaries on, because even if it is a hoax, it's an interesting, you know, story about, you know, government cover-ups and stuff, all in the guise of a video game at some hole-in-the-wall arcade in a suburb of Portland. Dungeon Buster says, there's little to no corroboration for the ROM, though, so whether the company was real, but there's a ton of speculation. There's a lot of stuff that there's a lot of stuff out there that people have made that said, oh, you know, I remade Polybius and stuff. There actually is like a PC version of Polybius that is out there that was made by a fan that he basically like took the urban legends and tried to make the game. And he even put like subliminal messages in it that would flash and stuff. So, I mean, the urban legends out there. This one's actually an urban legend, whereas the ET landfill thing, that was actually like reported in newspapers. We knew it was there. We knew they did it. Speaking of ET, Tiger Claw says, "What are they going to do with all those cartridges that they dig up? Sell them on eBay?" I know there are people out there that want to own a piece of history. I did see that Ernie Klein, who is the author of Ready Player One, he actually was also there and had an Atari 2600 set up, and he was actually trying to get some of those cartridges to work that they had dug up. So that's all I know that they've done with it, but they've only really shown like one cartridge. They showed a couple of other Atari things. I don't know how many they found. So, you know, there's a lot of neat stories around gaming. There's, you know, stuff about, you know, even Dungeon Buster brings up the Sword of Ultimate Sorcery from the Sword Quest contest that Atari held. Just that entire idea, you know, the whole Sword Quest saga and the Earth Quest and stuff like that. That's more interesting than an ET landfill. This was the easy one. Like, you got the easiest urban legend. Good job, guys. And it wasn't that terrible of a game. Okay, it was terrible. So the last story I'm going to talk about is about Nintendo, who had nothing to do with this ET dig. And this was based on a feature that was posted on Gamma Sutra. Gamma Sutra is is a site that's dedicated to video game development. So its readership is more developers and designers of games, not necessarily the players, because it's a little bit a lot of players don't care how the game is made. They just want to see if the graphics are good and how many P's are on the screen. But Gamma Sutra is a really wonderful site that goes really into development and developer issues and things like that. And they've been doing this series about the console makers and their indie game development initiative, because they're really all trying to court indies and what are they doing to make their platform a lot better for indies. And so there was a series where they were going to introduce you to the heads of all three platform holders' indies initiatives, getting into some of their personal quirks and how you might better relate to them. And so they've already done it with Microsoft and Sony, and they've both come out and they've talked very candidly, person to person, about about indie game development and just their personal habits and stuff, basically allowing you to get to know them, because a lot of indie developers, that's what they would like to to get to know, is this somebody I can have a beer with, right? And so that's what this was going to do, but unfortunately Nintendo put a stop to the series. Or at least, they did decline to be a part of it. So Nintendo's corporate policy has gotten in the way. So Dan Adelman, who is the head of Nintendo's Indie Initiative, was not allowed to speak with Gamma Sutra about the Indie Initiative. So this is the sort of corporate policy that perpetuates the stereotype that Nintendo doesn't work well with third parties and is an emblem of Nintendo's reluctance to change and become more open as markets shift. So the person who wrote this is also an indie developer. But so they would talk to him as a developer. They would not talk to him as a press. So the interviews that he's doing, these are fluffy. These are fluff pieces, basically. Like, these are not hard hitting that he's been doing. He's giving each platform head a venue to humanize themselves, which is ultimately glorified PR. But at the same time, it's useful for indie developers to know who they're dealing with and to know that there are actual humans working behind the scenes. So, that way everybody understands each other and more indies will feel at ease working with consoles, which means more games on the major platforms. But Nintendo chose not to be included. This interview could do nothing more to help the cause, and all it would have done was taken 30 minutes of Dan Adelman's time. And the article actually goes on to talk about, the Nintendo's history with this, and Nintendo being mainly a Japanese-based company. Sony actually has more arms outside of Japan, so they're working with the times, but Nintendo is very much a corporate first type of thing. They don't want their individual employees really to be, unless it's Shigeru Miyamoto. The employees do not speak on behalf of Nintendo. They have one corporate voice, and that's it. And it even points out that Dan Adelman actually seems to have been removed from Twitter. Or at least he's not allowed to speak on Twitter anymore. It's because he made a tweet that might have not been, that wasn't complete Nintendo PR. And I actually didn't paste that part of the article in here because I didn't want to read the whole thing, because it's a very nice long article over at Gamma Sutra. You should read it. But it was something that could have been seen as something negative about the Wii U in response to somebody. And that's the last tweet he made, and that was last August, I think. So this is not going to work too well for their indie initiative, because they're not willing to talk. They have a corporate voice, and that's, and if it's not Reggie, if it's not Iwata, and if it's not Bill Trinan from the Treehouse speaking on behalf of Miyamoto, they don't want the people to be the stars. So they don't want the director of indie outreach for Nintendo to speak as Dan Adelman. He only gets to speak as Nintendo, and that means you don't humanize the corporation. And, Nintendo's doing some really neat things to help with indies. They are, they've actually waived the platform fee if you're using Unity, which is the popular indie game engine. They waived that fee. But if you didn't hear it at the, at Game Developer Conference when they announced it, you didn't hear it, because they weren't Trump. They don't have any Twitter accounts or Facebook accounts that they're trumpeting that out. It's all, Nintendo of America corporate whatever corporate says, that's it. They don't have that factor that allows indies to, you know, to communicate. They don't speak on the same level as indies. It's very much, you know, still, we are Nintendo, look at us, not, hey, I'm Dan, I'm head of indie outreach at Nintendo. And what was very interesting was this writer, who is also a developer, wrote back and says, I understand, but here's why I think you should reconsider. And it was a very well-written response to the PR team. And this is the kicker of the entire story. He wrote that and basically says, you know, and part of it's like, you know, I think you should reconsider. Here's why. Here's what you're, you know, everybody else is doing. And here's why I, as an indie developer, wish you would do this. It would make me feel better. And it's a lot more than that. I'm not going to read the whole thing. But I am going to read you Nintendo's response to his reply. This is, honestly, this is exactly their response to, you know, I'm sorry that you feel that he shouldn't participate and stuff like that. Quote, really appreciate the background and insights, Brandon, and looking forward to any future opportunities. Have a good weekend, unquote. That was their response to his, I'm disappointed in you guys. And both of those sentences ended with an exclamation point. So they really were excited. And they wanted to have him to have a great weekend. This is why everybody thinks that Nintendo can't work well with third parties. This is exactly why. And I like the Wii U. I like the console. I like what it can do. I haven't turned mine on in months. People have called me a Nintendo fanboy. But this, you know, I understand that Nintendo's bread and butter is Mario and Zelda. And, you know, Mario Kart 8 is going to come out very soon. There might be a demo. I don't know. You know, the Smash Brothers is going to come out. And that's going to make Nintendo a lot of money. But imagine how much more money they could have if they just opened up a little bit. Imagine how much more goodwill they'd have in the game development community if they realized that the Wii U should be more than just Mario and Zelda. And when I say realize that, I mean actually realize it. Don't sit there and have Reggie Fils-Aimé go out and say, oh, of course we like indies. We, you know, it's the lifeblood of the system and blah, you know, blah, 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 blah. I used to work at Panda Express and, you know, it's all about the customers and stuff. And no, that's not realizing it. That's just saying things. Actions speak louder than words. So Nintendo, I know you don't listen to this podcast because I don't have enough hits for you guys to listen to this podcast. But open up a little bit, because there are people that grew up on your systems. They grew up playing Nintendo games back when all video games were Nintendo games. Sonic the Hedgehog was a Nintendo game, because nobody understood the difference between you know, an NES and a Sega Genesis. There are people that grew up in that, and they want to make a Nintendo game. They want to make a game for Nintendo systems. And you have this indie initiative so they can make that can happen. And you're doing the right things behind the scenes to make it happen. The problem is you're doing the wrong things in front of the curtain by not opening up, by not seeming human. It's 2014, guys. Get with the program. Or just sit back and say, oh, we got a new Mario coming out, and make your millions that way. We're going to take a quick music break, and then after that, we'll take your calls. You're participating with the Bobby Blackwolf Show here on the Voice of Geeks Network at VogNetwork.com.
Listening to the Bobby Blackwolf Show. Woohoo! It's a number one.
I thought chatter about video game radio was number one.
I'm number one. The heck with everybody else. You're listening to the great radio show. Now have a rotten day.
That was 2006 when we did that. Do you honestly think that would have happened today? I don't know. But that was Charles Martinet giving us a bumper. While I was in line to see the Wii, like not the Wii U, that was the Wii. and it was like a 2-hour line at E3. Anyway, if you want to leave a bumper, you don't have to be a corporate person that won't talk to indies. You can because then you wouldn't want to talk to me. You can leave a bumper by sending me an MP3 of just your voice to bumpers@bobbyblackwolf.com, or you can leave a voicemail on the toll-free number. Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you a chance to check out their service. You can get that 30-day free trial and get a free audiobook, and that's yours to keep even if you cancel before the trial is over. You can make anything there your free audiobook. All you got to do is go to audibletrial.com/Bobby Blackwolf. And a call came in while I was trying to do the ad, so Bobby Blackwolf Show, you are on the air. Who is this?
This is Pimp Method.
Pimp Method, what's up, man?
I'm doing all right. I would like to have a comment on the Nintendo situation about the indies.
Yes.
Okay, so you mean to tell me from what you said, Nintendo is very close-minded and the gaming press and community is not saying anything about that, but yet Sony and Xbox is very open from like the trailer accounts to actually having people come to the third party studios and the indies, but yet a certain amount of YouTube commentators and a couple of the gaming community and some fanboys are saying that Sony or Microsoft are very close-minded, and they are called them very corporate. But yet, they don't say anything about Nintendo acting this way, about Nintendo not being human. What is the catch?
Well, I think a lot of the people that make YouTubes and stuff like that, I think they gave up on Nintendo, and so they don't notice it. The difference is Nintendo really limits what their employees can say to the public unless it goes through an official channel, whereas Microsoft and Sony, they may be closed-minded, I don't know about, you know, their policies or whatever, but they do let their employees actually speak their mind and then fire them if people don't agree with them, like Adam Orth or whatever. I think that's all I was talking about, that Nintendo won't even let their guys talk to do a fluff piece with Gamma Sutra. And that's why this came up, whereas Nintendo and Sony were like, yeah, here, you know, have our guys, do your fluff piece.
Bobby, have you been watching The Matrix? Because you seem to be dodging questions like Neo. My point was, it seems to be a bit more hypocritical that a certain amount of the gaming community seems to be calling Microsoft and Sony out on this while they don't say anything about Nintendo. I was trying to say is, do you think it was a bit hypocritical that the gaming community, not the whole gaming community, but some that has some louder voices, is having the same venomous rhetoric towards Microsoft and Sony instead of like Nintendo from like the following facts and such and such that you said?
Sure. And what you're seeing is a lot of the stuff that you're probably talking about, like the YouTubes and stuff like that, they are fanboys of a particular console, so they will say bad things about the other console, which to them is just Microsoft and Sony, and Nintendo is not a part of it anymore. Like, not a part of their mind anymore. But sure, I mean, yeah, I mean, it's biased. And most of the YouTube channels that are out there, they see, you know, Howard Stern, or they see, you know, TMZ and stuff, and they want to be that kind of shock to be able to get the hits and stuff. So they're going to say nasty things about the console they don't like. But to them, it's Microsoft and Sony. It's a two-horse race, and Nintendo's already out of it, and they're not going to get hits by making fun of Nintendo because everybody makes fun of Nintendo.
I don't want to make fun of Nintendo. I'm just so disappointed because this is just me, but I want the old days back when it was just games.
I do.
Just games.
I miss those days.
Okay. Okay, I'm going to say it again. Just games. Nintendo finally wanted... Excuse me. Nintendo finally wanted They wanted a dream. They wanted to be known as an entertainment system. And that was the Wii.
Mm-hmm.
The Wii. Not NES. Mm-hmm. Not the Super NES. Not the N64, because those were still considered video games towards the mainstream press. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, due to certain changes within the company that I had no idea, because I basically left Nintendo a while ago, didn't keep up with anything, especially with like the magazines. They just basically did a 360 on Son of Us video game enthusiasts, made something called like the Wii, and just forgot about us. All of us should know that is a business, is a video game business.
Well, I mean, and I think what it is that we grew up and Nintendo's game design didn't. That's what turned a lot of people off.
Well, I think that is true. But they did try to be family friendly from several projects. For example, from like the first Tony Hawk, they actually had to like change some things as far as like the language about like certain jumps and not a lot of blood.
Well, but they were always doing that. I mean, because you look at like let's pick a third party NES game. Let's take Bionic Commando. If you play the Japanese version of Bionic Commando, you see Nazi imagery, you see Hitler, you see all this stuff. It comes over to the U.S., and they change all that imagery away. So you don't have the Nazi imagery. Maniac Mansion from LucasArts, or Lucasfilms Games at the time, they had scenes, entire scenes taken out, and they left one in by accident. I think like the hamster in the microwave was left in, and Nintendo didn't catch it. But they had to heavily edit. So Nintendo always had, and that was what the seal of quality was, is they took out a lot of objectionable material out of the NES games to make them family-friendly. They've always been family-friendly, and when we were kids, that was fine. We didn't notice that stuff. Now that we are older, you and I, people who grew up on the NES, now that we're older, we're saying, okay, now give us something for us. And Nintendo's like, no, we're still doing the same type of games we made in 85. You just grew up, and you're no longer in that age bracket. But, I mean, some of us still like the family-friendly games. But they kind of that's what they kind of concentrate on. And then with the Wii, they wanted the senior citizen market as well, and that they got that with the Wii.
I was just giving that as like a example, but still, they just forgotten about us literally as like the hardcore gamer. I understand that it is a business, and let me say that again, it's a video game business, but unfortunately, I'm just in a lost words, but they basically forgot about who basically made them.
Because the people that made them grew up.
Exactly.
And Nintendo didn't grow up with them.
Exactly. I'm not saying Nintendo has to allow blood or has to allow like very violent content. I'm just saying just bring back the games. Just be more open towards like your partners like EA and Activision and such, but it is what it is.
All right. Thanks for your call, man. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Two other people tried to call in, so we're going to try to get them in. Bobby Blackwell Show on Skype, 1-888-36-GAME-1, toll-free in North America. To register participation for this week's episode of the Bobby Blackwell Show on VogNetwork.com, use the passphrase, apology. And we're going to take this one. So we have another call here on the line. Bobby Blackwell Show, you are on the air. Who is this?
Hey, what's up, Bobby? This is Kai Judo.
Kai Judo, what's up, man?
Not much, man. I just wanted to recommend a game for you, and I have a question about that same game.
All right.
I know you're into board games, and I don't know if you're really into card games, trading card games, but I know you're a board game fan like I am.
Yeah.
And I want to know, have you checked out, what the hell is it called, Tabletop Simulator on Steam? You can actually get it off of Steam, but I purchased it on Steam, and it's early access, which I really don't like, but since it was beta, I took a chance, and from the stuff that I read about it, I just wanted to try it, and I have to say it's a godsend for anybody who's into board games and they actually don't have anybody around that they can play with in person. They can actually play people like online, you know, like I tell you, I have my cousin who lives way across on the other side of the country. So, you know, he and I, we can play board games that we used to play when we were kids, and pretty much anyone else you want to play with. It's a really great, I know there's other virtual tabletops out there, but this one, what makes this one great is the fact that there aren't any type of complex commands that you have to learn, because that's one of the problems that I always had with trying to get other people to play virtual board games. Is like, not only do you have to teach them how to play the actual game, but you got to teach them the interface as well.
Right.
And some of those interfaces are like, what, you know. You know, your average person who just plays board games, who's not into video games or really not in the computer tech, you know, they're just going to run away from it. But this thing is just all about, you know, you mouse over something, you drag it along. It's like you're playing in a virtual sandbox. It's like you basically have control over these pieces like you would in the real world. You don't have to for people that want to make games like me. You don't actually have to put in any type of commands or anything. You just all it is like, think about if you were making a video game. I mean, not a video game, board game, and you were setting up the board game for your friends, and you had it all set out on the table. That's basically how the programming of your game works. You just set, you know, you get the image of whatever you want to put in there. You lay it all out on the virtual table. You save it, and that's how your game is made. You don't have to learn anything else about it, which is really cool.
Yeah, I hadn't picked it up. But it did intrigue me, and I mean, I've heard of it because they made news in the VR community by being dumb for like a week. But other than that, no, I mean, it sounds really neat and stuff. And I mean, I know there's a lot of people that have grown apart. And so, I mean, if they do everything that they say they're going to do, and it sounds like they're on the right path, then yeah, I think it's going to be wonderful, because I think more people should get into board gaming and that type of stuff.
Yeah, because I messed around with Vassal. I made a few games on there, and I mean, like, it's not overly complicated, but making a game on Vassal, like, I made, I think, 4 games, and that literally took me a whole weekend just to make, you know, each one of those games took me like a weekend to make, and I'm just like, it has to be an easier way than this, and this thing has done it for me. I mean, you can literally make whatever type of game you want, I would say, in like under 5 minutes. Is that fast and simple? Now, my question to you is, a lot of people are playing Magic the Gathering on there. You can put all the cards in there if you have the images. You can play Netrunner. You can play whatever. I saw Arkham Horror on there. You know about Arkham Horror.
Oh, yeah. Right? I've played Arkham Horror.
Yeah, that's up there. I mean, it looks like the legit game. I mean, the graphics are pretty good. You actually look like you're at a table playing these games, right? Mm-hmm. And my question to you is, can these guys get into any type of legal trouble? Because I'm like, how is this even possible for you to put any type of board game out there? Pretty much anything. I don't think you could play Stratego on there, just for the simple fact that, like, you know how Stratego works, where, you know, your opponent is facing you so they can actually see what your pieces are, but you can't. Mm-hmm. Yeah, a game like that, I think you would actually have to trust the person to play something like that. But I mean, just playing it with anyone else, I mean, they could easily cheat, just move the screen around and just look at what their pieces are. So that won't work on there. But pretty much any game you make.
Yeah, the legal issue is if people try to sell them, or if the game, you know, it's kind of the same thing as, you know, MAME or ROM emulators. You know, MAME is not illegal, and an emulator is not illegal. What is illegal in those senses is, you know, is the ROM and stuff, which is a direct dump, and this isn't even that. This is probably more akin to there's pin MAME for pinball tables, where people have recreated pinball machines in pin MAME. And as long as they're not trying to sell it, I'm not sure if there's too much they can do. I guess the only legal trouble, not really legal trouble, but like the original company could go in and say, hey, you know, remove this from your store or whatever, but then it would just go underground. So yeah. As long as they're not trying to sell it, I don't think there's that much legal trouble they can get into. They'll just get like a cease and desist, maybe. And well, that's because of the assets, but not necessarily anything else.
I mean, they are selling it, though. It's on Steam for $14.99.
So that's the emulator.
Okay, it's
on Steam.
As long as they're not selling, we have Magic, you know, we have Magic the Gathering.
And as long as they're not selling, you know, if that's a user-contributed mod that's free and somebody downloads it to the internet and puts it in there, the tabletop simulator guys aren't going to get in trouble. The people that will get in trouble are the people that actually make the assets.
Gotcha. All right. Well, I'm going to go let you get to some more calls, but you got to try this thing, man. I mean, it is... It's great, man.
All right.
Really. All right.
Thanks for your call, man.
All right.
And in case you're wondering what the VR thing I was talking about, and I'm pretty sure it's Tabletop Simulator. I don't have it in front of me, so this may be completely wrong. It may have been something else. But they had a Kickstarter, and the day the dream died, they posted an update saying, we are pulling Oculus Rift support. We are no longer going to support the Oculus Rift. The problem is it was a stretch goal that they had actually attained via their Kickstarter. So they made this announcement in the comments. They didn't actually make a real announcement. It was found like 6 days later and posted on Reddit, and people started demanding refunds. And they're like, no. We were in the heat of the moment. We didn't cancel our dev kit order, which they had claimed that they had called and canceled the dev kit order. We didn't cancel. We're still going to do it. But it was an actual stretch goal that they had made and hit to have Oculus Rift support in this tabletop simulator. And I'm pretty sure it was this same one that he's talking about. I'm not sure, though. But I think it was. So that's what I was referencing there. Coming up next here on the Voice of Geeks Network at VogNetwork.com is Orange Lounge Radio. It's three people out in Sacramento, California. They talk about games for so much longer than we do. They actually got a lot of calls tonight. So they're going to have a ton of calls tonight. It's going to be great. And this is kind of a milestone. Even though they don't celebrate milestones. Sacramento, are you guys there?
We are here, Bobby. How are you?
So this is an episode that ends in 50.
Yes, it is. Yay! Noisemakers, confetti. Exactly.
You're halfway to a milestone that ends in 00.
Yes.
Something like that.
Almost to 600. Actually, we're halfway to 1,100. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
I'm not going to count 600. I'm going to count the evil one.
I know. I was saying earlier, it's like, oh, okay, this October, we're going to hit episode 573, even though there's very few listeners of ours left who would get that. And then sometime in the next 3-4 years, we'll hit episode 666.
Yeah. Those are the real milestones.
That's right. Now, that's a milestone.
That's when we sell our soul to the devil, if we had souls left to sell.
And that's when you go play E.T.
Yes. Or whatever else they dug up out there.
I already have E.T.
I do, too.
I know. You can find.
I'm somewhat ashamed
of E.T. at a thrift
store.
Store or flea market. Those terms.
Yeah, all this talk was of E.T. this week and nothing of the dead hookers that were out there, too. You know, it's like dead hookers everywhere. What's going on? And E.T., yeah.
Oh, Bobby, though, I have one thing that's a little cooler than E.T.
All right.
I have Casey's Crazy Chase.
That is cooler because I've never heard of it.
It was a game they made for the Odyssey 2 that was a lot like Pac-Man. Mm-hmm. And so they actually sued them into not making it anymore and having to recall copies out of stores. So if you can find a copy of KC Crazy Chase for the Odyssey 2, that's actually pretty rare.
All right.
I found one at a thrift store for 50 cents.
You know what would have been newsworthy is if they found a box of Custer's Revenge cartridges out there. Now that would have been newsworthy.
In the leather case.
Yes.
Because it came with that leather case. Inconspicuous case. So do you have Polybius, though? That's the big question.
Did you know that that game made it into an episode of The Simpsons?
Did it?
In the background at an arcade?
I didn't know that.
Yep, there's a Polybius back there.
I actually didn't know a lot about that controversy before Twitter the other day.
The government was trying to control kids through video games, and now they just put out U.S. Army. Or America's Army, whatever.
Yeah, that whole thing. So...
Maybe Jimmy Hoffa's in all those cartridges.
Maybe. Or just a bunch of... It's interesting to me how they didn't decompose at all. Like, I know their tech carts and things like that don't probably decompose for like 2,000 years.
It's probably industrial-grade plastic. I mean, they made the plastics out of a lot sturdier materials.
Mm-hmm. Somewhere there's a crying Native American.
Right. Here's what I don't get, though. And here's the thing. Like, they got the permit for that day, and they started digging that day, that morning, and they immediately found it.
Yeah, right?
You know, I would have thought it would have taken a little bit longer to find it. But it was, like, the very first place they went at that big landfill, and they found it within, like, an hour.
Did they even have to go through concrete to get it?
I think they did.
Oh, okay.
I think that was, like, what all the permits were needed, were to, get, you know, break up the concrete.
Well, I thought that they had someone directing them to the location, because they had talked with one of the executives, didn't they?
Yeah. Well, I haven't watched the documentary yet, but it's going to be on Games for Gold next week, I guess, or next month. Well,
I mean, it's not like we did. I mean, I don't know. This was one of those things where it wasn't exactly that it was a lie. It was just one of those things where nobody had the receipts.
Yeah.
You know, newspapers had ran this story in the 80s, and it's a big part of why it failed. I don't think, you know, urban legends usually aren't true. But there was a lot of truth to this one, but it was just kind of like to actually see it, I think, is what's driving people crazy. Because it really is one of those stories that sounded like legend. Like, why would Atari just throw a bunch of games away like that?
Because it sucked.
Because they made some very poor management decisions. Yeah. Let's hope history doesn't repeat.
If I may, by the way, I'd like to correct Kaijudo.
Okay.
Plastic can decompose. It takes a very long time for it to do so. However, most modern plastics are also made out of partial vegetable material, where they are meant to decompose. Like, you can make them out of potato or corn.
Yeah.
So, just saying. And you can actually use dandelions now as a source of resin for plastics and rubber.
All things considered, those cartridges were only in the ground about 30 years. That's not a long time.
And some of them were in the box.
Yeah. So.
And covered in concrete, which is only porous to a certain amount.
That's true.
So.
Yeah, because the one they pulled out was actually in the box. They actually, like, the box was kind of crushed, but the cartridge was still fine in it.
And I do believe I read somewhere that as part of the permits and things like that, they will get to keep the 250 of the cartridges or something like that. Mm-hmm. So I don't think they just pulled one. I think they did pull, I mean, because if you, you know, again, if the urban legends are to be believed, Atari dumped 14 truckloads of boxes in that landfill. So there was plenty of cartridges to go around down
there. I just want to know, though, if they found any of the other prototypes that were supposedly
the only other thing I saw in a picture was Centipede.
I thought they had like something from Raiders of the Lost Ark in there, too.
Oh, maybe.
And there was also supposed to be the Millipede one, too, but because we actually got a repro of the prototype of Millipede.
But you're literally looking for a needle in a haystack at that point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's the big news, is that we dug through the trash and found something.
Right.
That's the big news for the week.
Ultimate in dumpster diving.
It's seriously a whole documentary based on a Reddit post.
It's that or a NASCAR car based on a Reddit post.
Yes.
That's okay, you know, because tomorrow everyone will forget about E.T. in the landfill because another game that was made for PC will have some sort of mod done to it too. Get to work, shoehorn Oculus Rift support into it.
Yeah, maybe they can get E.T. working on the Rift.
Oh, God. They haven't made a mod for Stella to have it work on the Rift yet.
Yet. Keyword, Bobby, yet.
Actually, I would like that, because like, I have the Super Nintendo, which you saw, it's SNES 9X, and they added some Rift support to it, which is really neat, because I think you saw it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that. It was like you were sitting in a movie theater watching somebody play SNES 9X on the big screen. I like that.
Yeah, so I wouldn't mind having an NES emulator that does that, or have Stella do that. I don't think anybody else has done it, but that would be cool and stuff. But I was groaning when I saw those gaming blog posts today, because it's not even Sonic.
Yeah.
It's like I think it's made an Unreal Engine. It was like some kid, kind of like the Zelda thing, and he made a first-person Sonic-style game, and then somebody's like, oh, I could use these injection drivers with it, and let me make a YouTube video out of it, and then it hit all the blogs. I'm like, is that all you need to get hits?
It must have been a slow news week or something, although it actually really wasn't. There was a lot of other stuff that went on, so I don't know why suddenly. But I guess it's just the idea of Sonic and the Rift, because obviously it's going to make people sick if it goes too fast, you know?
Which they already did. They already did Sonic Generations last year with injection drivers, because it's actually 3D compatible and everything.
Oh, there you go.
And it was news then. short memories. What are you guys going to be talking about tonight?
Clicks. We need more clicks so we can send more people to E3. What we got on deck tonight? There's actually some news around GameStop and their future, and they might be burying some GameStop stores in that landfill if this update is to be. But you know, well, actually, it's not a rumor. It is happening. They are going to close some stores, so it's going to be interesting to hear about what their future is going to entail. So we'll talk about a little bit about that tonight. Also, a PlayStation 4 update, big one coming this week. We'll talk about what all's in that and how excited we are or aren't. And has PC become the superior race after all when it comes to PC versus console?
Yes.
Some sales figures might say yes.
Yes.
Not to start that whole debate.
Yes. Well, there's no debate. It's yes.
So we're going to talk about...
Numbers don't lie, right, Bobby?
We're going to talk about the receipts tonight.
All right. Thanks so much, OLR.
Thank you, as always, Bobby.
They are up next, and I am out of here for the night. I will be back next Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, right here on the Voice Geeks Network at VogNetwork.com. So you can catch us live and interact with the show directly. You can leave me a voicemail on any topic or leave a bumper for use in the show via the toll-free number that is 1-888-36-GAME-1, or you can contact me with an MP3, bumpers@BobbyBlackWolf.com. I'm on Facebook, Facebook.com/BobbyBlackWolf, or Twitter, @BobbyBlackWolf, or you can submit questions on the website. Hey, if you like the show, tell a friend. If you hate the show, tell an enemy. I don't care. Just tell someone. The show's not for everybody, but it may be for somebody who doesn't know about it yet, but we could not make the live show work without the help of the chatters, so thank you very much, Dark Soccer, Dark Titsia, DC Nate, Hex, Sky, The Rob D, VHXXV, Doomplague, Fifth Dream, Havoc978, Shadow Next Gen, ActDev, Alan Alchemy, Bacon Bits, Bob Coffee, Buchikawa, Brad from Pod Culture, Burr, Seal, The Blue Guy, Dungeon Buster, Eric RPG, Game Guru, GK128, Hitstun, Kaijudo, Kenzie, Mako, Matt Cube, Monster B, MXC, MXT, Orange Wright, PKJR92, Queen Simia, Raginator, SJ Winner, Matt, Tiger Claw, Toagak, Wyland, What Up G, Winter, Yugazilla, Zappy, and Zether. So that is it for me. And in case you were wondering, if you did hear last week, I do have a new job. So I did actually get employed, and I start in 2 weeks. And VOG's not affected. So I'll still be doing the podcast after that. See you next week. Bye.
A winner is you. The views and opinions expressed are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and are not necessarily the opinions of
the VOG Network, people who need to hire new voiceover guys,
or your mom. Although if Bobby said it, it really should be. This has been a production of Bobby Blackwolf Studios.